we were actually in corporate America, and we could tell that the way work was happening was just stupid, and it needed to change. Started to experiment at Best Buy with giving people complete control over their time versus having rules about when you come in, when you leave, core hours, all that stuff that's really a throwback to the 1950s.
We actually had Dan Pink, who wrote the book Drive, on a couple weeks ago. And one of his things is that people need autonomy. And he actually quotes you guys. Why is this so important? Why does this end up being an important part? People actually liking their work, actually being more productive.
It's so simple, really. It's taking that paternalistic structure of the manager telling you where you need to work, when you need to work, which makes us all feel like children, and giving us the autonomy to make that decision about when and where we do work. It's really so simple. It's like I get up in the morning, I know what work I have to do, I want to have breakfast with my kids, or I want to go work out. But if I come in at 9, I get snarky stares and people making comments. And that isn't about getting the work done. That's just about an old belief that work starts at 8. And if you're late, you're not really a good worker.
And this seems to be so ingrained in our culture, where you have to see people in order to know that they're working, even though there's so much data that says that that's not necessarily the case.
Right. There's a ton of data that shows that people who have control over their time are much more productive, they're much happier, they have richer lives. But there's this belief that not everybody can handle that. And that's where the problem lies. It's that belief where, well, you know, I have some people on my team that just really can't handle that kind of flexibility. When really, it's the manager that can't handle not having control.
And your book is actually titled Why Work Sucks and How to Fix It. And you talk about some of these tools that you guys have created, essentially enable people, enable both managers and employees to have a framework that they can work in?
We have something called an environmental sludge eradication strategy. And that's probably the most important part of this whole movement. And that's really getting the language of the workplace on results and not about how people are spending their time. So a comment like, oh, I wish I had a kid and I could leave early,
right,
is considered sludge. And so making that comment does not, it's not focused on work. It's not focused on the good work people are doing. It's just focused on the clock and somebody's getting something I'm not and it's not fair and all of that stuff. What Roe does is it levels the playing field and it gives every single person the autonomy and the control to work however they want, wherever they want, whenever they want.
Take all the time cards and the clocks and all that kind of stuff and just smash them.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like the days when we all burned our bras. Let's burn those time clocks and those, you know, in and out boards and all that kind
of
stuff.
People are so mobile these days. It's not like you have to be stuck to a desk anymore. Do those tools really enable this kind of different kind of way of looking at work?
You know, they really do. Technology, we've had the technology for a long time to be very mobile. And we still, you know, put people in cubes and force them to come into work. There are some jobs that you have to be in a certain place at a certain time. I mean, if I'm a zookeeper, I can't feed the animals from my home. I have to go to the cage, right?
Right.
But what Roe does is it gives everybody, no matter what your job is, that your own accountability to know when you need to be in a certain place, when you need to be there. Hmm. I mean, people with desktop computers are in a row, but they still decide when they're going to use that tool, the office, to do work and when they're going to work from somewhere else.
So walk us through a couple, because I'm just picturing when you first walk into a traditional office and you propose this idea and you talk to them about it, the initial reaction must be you're crazy, right?
Yes, the initial reaction is it'll never work here, and everybody says that. And when they say it'll never work here, our response is, so what you're saying is, in your company, you can't focus on results and results only.
Yeah.
Because what people think this is they think it's like a telework program.
Right.
And it's not that. And so they get very, you know, nervous about that. And where's everybody going to be? And how are we going to know where to find them? And how do we know if they're really working? And those are, you know, valid concerns. But again, it's about that control piece.
As I was reading your book, that was one of the really interesting things, because I think most people hear about the results-oriented work environment and they say, well, it's just telework. But this is very different from telework.
Oh, it's so different. With telework, it's still controlled. it's still, you can telework 2 days a week or 1 day a week, and I need to know when you're working that day, and you need to be available the whole day to me. It's extremely restricted. In fact, telework, we found that it's a lot more controlled than if you just came in the office every day. In a row, it's just work.
Yeah.
Just do your work wherever, whenever. And the word telework is like a label. Oh, you're one of those teleworkers.
Right.
You know, and it has a bad connotation. We know those teleworkers aren't really working. They're just doing their laundry and, you know, making dinner. They're not working.
Yeah.
And that's why we're smashing all that out. We don't talk about telework. We don't talk about flex time. We talk about one thing, and that is the work getting done, period.
The bigger challenge on managers or on employees?
Change is for everybody, but for management, it's a really interesting change because they're used to being more of a hall monitor,
right,
and seeing where everybody is. And so that's a huge change for them. They're going from permission granting to performance guiding. And that's a key shift for management. The people don't have any trouble with it.
How do you get people to do that?
We have a bit of voodoo magic that we do.
I love voodoo magic.
It does work. Actually, it's because it's a transformational change, it's not your typical teach and train program. It's really changing people's beliefs from a very deep level. We actually have a 4 to 6 month process we take teams through. If it's a larger organization, or we have one-day seminars as well. But we're really messing with people's minds when we're taking them through this journey.
Mm.
And it's not easy, but when we're taking people through and everybody's learning this new way to think all together, managers and employees, they come out the other side and they go, why did we do it that other way before? And people think they're focused on results. That's why when people say, well, we're results-oriented here, we'll say to them, but you're not results only. And that only piece is where we rip the rug out from under everybody. There's no more core hour rules. There's no more early. There's no more late. There's just the work. That's a big change for people.
How do you tell if you're a result-only organization?
There are no comments about when people are working at all. That's the first sign. So when we go into an organization and we see rows and rows and rows of cubes and everybody all together watching what each other are doing, that isn't row. If you go into an organization and you hear them say, some of our people telework, that's not row. So it's pretty easy to spot.
How difficult is it to get to that place where you know what result you're looking for?
You know, it's really difficult because we're used to measuring activities, just like you're talking about. And so what we do when we go in is we ask this question. If you do your job well, what is the outcome? And generally what people say is, well, I'll get, you know, 50 widgets done, or I'll get, you know, 40 of these applications filled out. Okay, that's great, but if 40 applications are filled out, what's the outcome? So we keep pushing people to get to that higher level. It's as simple as I'm a bricklayer or I'm building a cathedral.
Mm.
And we get people attached to the broader purpose, so that the activities they do actually get them there and they feel more engaged.
I know one of the challenges for federal agencies, they tend to be large organizations. And so if you're at one small part, figuring out how you fit into the overall mission of this agency can be challenging.
Important thing is getting people involved in figuring out what the outcome is and how it should be measured versus management sitting around a table figuring that out. When you get people involved, you're going to get a lot more buy-in and energy than if you try to hand that down from the top.
In your book, you have a couple of objections that you've received over the years. People will take advantage of these kinds of things, and all of a sudden, people are just slacking off already.
The only way that you can take advantage of a results-only work environment is to not do your work. So when people say take advantage, they're saying, oh, people are just going to not do any work and still get a paycheck. Mm. Well, guess what? That's what they're doing in the traditional work environment. They're coming in every day. They're putting in their time, and nobody knows what they're supposed to be doing. So you can't take advantage of a row. The only way you can do it is to not get your work done.
It seems like the challenge is on the supervisor side. You have to make sure you have measurements in place and that you're tracking folks.
You're not guessing what the outcomes are. You're not guessing what the measures are. You get very clear, and then you go about doing it.
Part of this process, having almost more regular, transparent measurements of the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. And you have to be looking at that real time all the time.
Yeah.
With performance management systems, that's an event-based idea where, you know, it's coming and we all have to get ready for it, and then we have this appraisal, and then it goes back to status quo. In performance appraisals, all your listeners out there are probably thinking, oh, yeah, I know what that's like. We get to performance appraisal time. I don't know what my goals were. I start writing them down. I start rating myself. And you're doing it after you've already done the work versus before.
Right.
So it can be, it's a broken system. People need to be looking at results every day, real time.
So this appraisal process becomes a very different thing from just the annual go in and meet with your boss for an hour.
Oh, absolutely. You know what you're doing and you know how you're performing every single day in a row. You don't have to wait to hear it at your end. People say that. That's just one of those things that people say, and I say that in air quotes, about other people because they want to control their time and they want to control when they come and when they go and all of that. It's so interesting. The people that managers think can't handle this type of, air quotes again, flexibility, They are oftentimes the people that perform the best. You know, when you have a manager that believes that you can't handle this, well, guess what? That's how you're going to act.
Yeah. Well, and one of the challenges that I've heard floating through there is, you know, even with, say, telework, you know, this is something that you earn. Once you've become, you know, proven yourself, then we can allow you to telework or allow you to have some of these other kinds of skills and tools. But this isn't something that we need to make sure that we're all on the same page initially is the kind of thinking that I've heard.
No, that whole thing about, you know, it's a privilege is a crock, too. Mm. I mean, people, you know, we all have the right to be free, and what the company owns is they don't own your time. They don't own your life. They own the result of your work, the work that they're paying you to do. That's what they own. But that whole notion that from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, we have no control over our time,
it's
wrong, it's old. It's outdated, and we need to move on from that and focus on what's important. And that's, what am I paying you to do? And then you do that. People look at those kind of managers and they go, I'm not doing this. Goodbye. Yeah. And that's why we're all on Monster.com or any of those sites where you're looking for jobs. People are surfing those all the time because they're looking for, they're craving that freedom and control, and they know that they can do better work if they have that control.
And again, there is data that says that if you give people this kind of ability, they actually perform better.
It's common sense, but it's that belief that people have about, you know, some people can't have that flexibility, people are going to take advantage. All those beliefs are what stop us, even from the clear, you know, results that we see in studies we see. I mean, think about smoking.
Yeah.
Everybody knows smoking's bad for your health. We can write a million articles and give a million case studies. People are still going to smoke. And it's something that it's a very difficult change to make, to have people actually believe they can trust people to own their own time and do their work in a way that makes sense for each person and not for some old belief that, you know, the only way to team is for all of us to be here.
One of the other concerns that the relationships end up being so important, the water cooler. If I'm not there, I'm not a part of the fabric of the organization.
Yes, and that's one of the problems with telework, is that most of the people are in the office, and then those teleworkers are not. But in a results-only work environment, everybody has the same opportunity. The whole order changes. So you're not the one person that's out. And the way relationships are built is people decide how that relationship's going to be, when they're going to get together face-to-face. It's not just a default. And, you know, if you look at Generation Y and you tell them they can't build relationships, that's crap. You know, they text, they're on Facebook, they get together, they're social. But they're social not only face-to-face, but globally.
One of the concerns that I've heard from employees is that line blurs between work and my life. How do I distinguish, and does work just take over my life?
No, actually, your life takes over.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that there's another belief that you just brought up, Chris, that if I work like this, work will take over my life. And I really like to keep it compartmentalized.
Yeah.
But when people start doing this, and they realize that they have the freedom to stop and start their work anytime, 24/7. They feel good because, you know what, sometimes you don't feel like working at 8 in the morning. Sometimes you don't feel like it at 10 in the morning. So in a row, you would do something else and then go back to your work. Mm. And everybody still can, you know, communicate through email, voicemail. It's not like we're disconnected when we're not in the office. Mm.
I know you've been working with the Office of Personnel Management and setting up a row environment, and they're doing it on basically a pilot basis.
Yes, they are. Let's have a big woo-hoo for that.
For an organization like the federal government, which this is 180 degrees different from how the federal government has traditionally operated.
Yes.
How do you wade into that pool?
In the federal government like we're in, it's best to take a group of people and actually prove that this is a better way of working. And I think we definitely will prove that out over the next few months. There is an independent evaluation of the pilot, and I already know, we've already done our first session with people, and they're people.
Right.
I mean, you know, you think of federal workers. I was on the plane coming in, and this guy said to me, "What are you doing in D.C.?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to do some work here." And he said, "Well, don't work too hard. None of the other people do."
Yeah.
And that...
Oh, it drives me insane.
Oh, my gosh. I just have to bite my tongue, because that belief that if you're a government worker, you're a slacker, that has got to change.
Yeah. Luckily, I have a radio show. I don't have to bite my tongue when people say that. So.
Good for you. You're lucky. One of the lucky ones.
Yeah. As I was reading your book, one of the thoughts that kept coming up to me was, you know, people do have this impression, you know, good enough for government work. I think almost in a way, our focus on the individual pieces of it rather than on the results of it has almost enabled that kind of thinking to happen, because it becomes part of almost the fabric of federal agencies.
Absolutely. I mean, the people that work in the federal government, they get into it for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But mostly it's a certain type of service work. But over time, that whole culture of they just put in their time, you know, they're not really working that hard, everything's falling apart, we're taxpayers and we deserve better, all that kind of stuff just keeps weighing down and weighing down and weighing down the people in the system.
Yeah. Well, and there was even that horrible Saturday Night Live did a skit about government workers a couple of weeks ago. And just, again, that kind of pervasive opinion. Well, let me ask you, as you've been working with federal workers, are they hearing it? Is this something that speaks to them?
Oh, they it's so disturbing to them, but they don't know how to get out of it. They don't know how to change it.
But does Roe give them, does this almost bashing the time clocks, getting rid of it, does this speak to them? Does this seem like something that, again, it's outside of their culture, traditional culture? Does it seem like, when you're talking to them, do their eyes light up, or do they go, "Oh, my God, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this"?
You know, we did this big sort of speech about this with a whole bunch of the OPM workers, and it became like a revival meeting.
Yeah.
People were clapping and cheering. They know they're doing good work, but they don't know how to combat all the, you know, they're always justifying. So where were you? How come you didn't, you know, did you put in your time? They're always justifying everything but talking about the work,
yeah,
the actual outcome of the work. And so we're helping them with language around how to start talking differently about what they do. Not about the time they put in, not about how long they work, not about their commute, not about the number of applications they're filling out, but actually connecting to the broader result of what we're looking for as people in communities. And that is so exciting to them, because that's what they want to talk about, but they're always defending themselves.
What do you run up against that people say, you know, causes the first hurdle?
I think that's probably the biggest thing is all of the regulations. So there's a lot of policy.
A lot of rules.
Yeah, a lot of rules and actual policy like wage and hour laws, etc.
Yeah.
That fly in the face of this, because in a row there wouldn't even be delineations between exempt and non-exempt, for example. So these kind of things, you know, we do have to follow the letter of the law, but there are ways to still free people up. And there's old rules like core hours. That's not a policy necessarily.
Right.
When a manager says you have to be here from this time to this time.
Yeah.
So there's some workplace rules we can smash out of the way, And then what's left are those government policies that we just have to work with until this movement becomes so big that the policies have to change.